welcome to Cruise Club. We've got the need to podcast. This is episode 9, The Color of Money from 1986. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And with us today, a very special guest. I was trying to think, have you only done one podcast with us, or have you been on more than one episode?
I'm not positive anymore.
I think it's just Mom and Dad.
You're on our Mom and Dad episode, which sort of became a conversation about all of Nicolas Cage's career.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it was great. We also talked about a project that you could not really talk about then, but has since sort of been officially announced in Bill and Ted Face the Music, which is very exciting. We have with us today Mr. Greg McLennan. Hello, Greg.
How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me on again.
Very well. Thank you for being here. I am so excited to talk about this movie that I had never seen before.
I had a lot of questions for you guys, but I was like, maybe I can ask them on the podcast. I don't know how this is going to go, but we'll see.
I love this movie.
Nice. Relief.
I messaged Mike 10 minutes in, and I was just like, I'm only 10 minutes in, so this is a disclaimer, but I fucking love this movie. Like, it makes Pool... I mean, Pool's already pretty cool, I guess, but, like, it makes Pool cool in a way that, like, I didn't think was possible.
It's like watching Pool if you were on cocaine and Martin Scorsese was shooting it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it has that adrenaline behind it, I think, more so than playing actual Pool sometimes. But, I mean, I was afraid it wasn't going to hold up. I hadn't seen it in a while, but no, like, it's as good as ever, I thought.
So my real secret shame is that I have not seen The Hustler. So I don't know the prequel to this, but I guess this movie doesn't seem to spoil anything other than, I guess, Paul Newman's character doesn't die, which I didn't think that would be, you know, but like, yeah. You know, I don't know what it's about.
A movie that's 25 years removed, but we are talking about The Color of Money, and I do feel like it kind of spoils because all Paul Newman does is talk about how he got completely taken and he was down on his dumps and he got like force retired. So you kind of see how The Hustler ends.
Yeah, he got the screws put to him, but it's interesting to watch this in this day and age when you see people reviving franchises 25 years later and people going, why? What the hell? But like, this was done then? That totally slipped my mind. Like, I knew it was a sequel to The Hustler, but I wasn't sure how much time had passed, how often this had been done, you know, how it was received, if people even were aware of that. And I think there's only like a few moments where it really matters. There's one pivotal moment, I think, that if you've seen The Hustler, you're like, oh shit, like there's a lot more weight to this particular scene. But otherwise, like, it really kind of works really well on its own.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, like, that was the natural concept because there was a sequel to the book for The Hustler, which was called The Color of Money. And the guy who wrote the book actually wrote a screenplay for Martin Scorsese. And then whenever they were like putting the movie together, they were like, you know what? This doesn't work. We're going to make a movie that stands on its own, but is like a legacy. And like, it was Paul Newman who was pushing on Martin Scorsese, and Martin Scorsese didn't have any passion for making this movie, but Paul Newman was pushing him. And then ultimately they did, but they took the script that they had gotten based on the book and then they threw that out and then they wrote an entirely new script.
And the weird thing, I was reading all that, and the weird thing about the books though, Mike, I don't know if you looked into this, but like the books were written 25 or something years apart too.
Wow,
like they were both written like 2 years before the movie came out. So like there was this wide gap in the novels. There's also this wide gap in the films. And what I thought was kind of cute, I guess is the word, is that a couple times in this movie, Paul Newman's like, I was playing pool before you were born, which is true that The Hustler came out before Tom Cruise was born. Like all this stuff, like there has been a long time since the first movie that I still want to, I'll see The Hustler this year. Wait, question for you. Is The Hustler as good as this movie or no?
I would argue, and this is coming from a person that super duper loves The Color of Money, I think The Hustler is one of the finest films ever made.
But wow, okay.
A different kind of vibe, I guess, because I mean, this one is dark and depressing, but it's also exciting and cool. And I feel like The Hustler is, if the character of Paul Newman wasn't in The Color of Money and you just got to see the like brash bravado of Tom Cruise and how kind of that toxic masculinity just starts to like eat him whole.
Yeah, right. He kind of is the Vince character to a degree in that movie, and 25 years earlier, so he seems even more sort of out of control and stuff. But yeah, that movie was sort of, that's as far as I've been alive, that was always considered a classic. I've only seen it once in its entirety. It's got a very different pace, but still good nonetheless, absolutely.
I mean, you put Paul Newman in a movie, it's going to be pretty electric.
Yeah.
But it covers all the bases. It's drama. It's got an excessive amount of bourbon and pool playing.
I mean, what's not to love about that? Before we get too much further into this movie, I want to take a quick pause. As someone, not myself, you, Greg, as someone who has programmed film marathons at the Alamo Drafthouse.
Right.
I think the answer is yes. Have you done a Tom Cruise marathon?
Yeah, we did two Cruise Controls.
Was this movie... So I guess two questions. Was this movie included, and what were the movies that you did? Because knowing what I've learned here, because we're doing, as I think you know, because I think you signed up for some of the other ones too, we're doing the Tom Tom Club, so we're alternating Cruise and Hanks. And what I've learned is that the Hanks that are coming up in the next like four or five episodes are some of the really, really good stuff. But through eight episodes, rough waters early in Tom Hanks's career. But Tom Cruise, in his first nine movies here, has The Color of Money, which is awesome, Risky Business, which is awesome, and Top Gun, which is awesome, among other movies that are like good even if he's not in them. So like it's been a real treat to do these.
He made Legend just before he made Color of Money and Top Gun in the same year. You know, obviously people have their, they either love Legend or they think Legend is just an exercise in like beautiful filmmaking but not necessarily like a good movie.
Yep, I fall into that latter camp.
It's just crazy to think that you watch Tom Cruise in Top Gun, and then 6 months later, you're watching Tom Cruise in Color of Money, and I don't know if the world at the time was just like, this guy is going to be the biggest star that the world has ever seen. Obviously, yes, because Top Gun had like blown the lid off of it.
He's always been very versatile, I think we've seen, and even in movies where he wasn't a star, you know, stuff like Taps and Outsiders, which The Hustler has a small cameo in the opening shots, I think.
It's true.
But, like, he has always been like electric and stuff, you know, Joey. Like, we even talk about those first 46 seconds that he had on screen and stuff.
In Endless Love, yeah, where he runs on screen as Billy the Arsonist. It's fantastic. Yeah.
And here he's holding his own with Paul Newman. It's great. Yeah.
Funny is the whole like end of The Color of Money, Paul Newman's like, let's not go to the Bahamas just yet. And then it's like at the end, it's like, oh, the Bahamas are looking pretty good. And the next movie that Tom Cruise makes is he goes and makes Cocktail.
Another movie that I have not seen that I'm excited for, even though I've heard it's one of the worst Tom Cruise movies, but I am being optimistic about that. So we will find out.
Justin, the first Cruise Control, I opened with The Color of Money, knowing
awesome.
Well that everybody was expecting all of these iconic Tom Cruise movies, and I really wanted to set the tone going, hey guys, we could be watching fucking anything today.
Mm-hmm.
And then I followed that up with Cocktail, because I thought the performance of Vince in this movie, like this like cocky fucking idiot, segues really nicely into Cocktail. I'm trying to think what I did after that. I invited Tim League, the owner of the Alamo Drafthouse, up on the stage, and I said, hey Tim, I used my company card to buy a 35 millimeter print of this next movie, but I wanted you to have a shot of whiskey with me up on stage so you didn't get mad. And then I played Far and Away.
Okay. That's the first Nicole Kidman one, right? Mm.
Well, the they were in Days of Thunder first.
Oh, okay.
How many reels is Far and Away? That's a long one, right?
I think it was like a 6-reel. I mean, it's not that long.
Oh, I always thought it was like 3 hours.
It's
so.
The Irish immigrant Titanic. But then I followed it up with Collateral. And I managed to track down a 70 millimeter print of Days of Thunder, and I have a huge spot for Days of Thunder. So I cranked the volume all the way up and just like ripped everybody's faces off by finishing with Days of Thunder in 70 millimeter.
I've only seen one of those five. I mean, before today, I'd only seen one of those five in Collateral. So I'm very excited. I mean, I was looking forward to all of them anyway. But if that's, you know, if that's where we're winding up, like that's exciting. And then you said you did a second one. What was on the second one? Because that I mean, that seems like a good lineup, but that's not at all, like you were saying, what people would be expecting when they go see five mystery Tom Cruise movies.
The surprise of the second one, it was Mission Impossible 1 through 4. And then we showed 5 early.
Oh, that's very cool.
And I gave everybody like a countdown bomb watch that said Cruise Control on it.
I saw Rogue Nation at, I think, the Slaughter Lane Draft House, and I got like a t-shirt. Do you know those t-shirts with like the storyboard panel on it? Do you remember those?
That guy, Mark, gosh, I can't remember his last name, but the storyboard artist that works with Christopher McQuarrie.
Yeah.
Stuff. He lives here in Austin, and he'd done a bunch of stuff with us for like Birth, Movies, Death, and we had like a big mural of that airplane.
That was at the Slaughter Lane location, I think, right? That mural?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was there. I think he did a Q&A, and like we all got the t-shirts. We got to see it early. And like that movie rules. Like all the Mission Impossibles are great, but like I remember that like a very special, because a lot of the, you know, the cool draft house stuff, but the only special cruise thing I think I did when I was in Austin was the Rogue Nation, you know, Q&A thing there. So I'm very excited to get to that one again.
Joey, do you still have that cheapo Rogue Nation pin I gave you when I saw it in IMAX at the local AMC theater?
Oh, I'm sure it's somewhere. I don't know where it is, but I'm
sure
it's
like
somewhere.
I got like 6 of them. I just handed like 6 into my pocket.
I love it.
I mean, I hosted that screening where we did the Q&A with
this. Oh, I mean, not to, you know, blow smoke up your ass, but like I knew who you were because you were sort of, you know, there's not that many really sort of prominent draft house hosts I knew the ones that's affiliated with Fantastic Fest, and so I knew sort of who you were. So yeah, we've been in the same room a couple times before, so that's exciting. But yeah, so The Color of Money, let's get back to this, because this is great. I'm excited to talk about it. Let's kick things off by doing a little bit of our structure here. Greg, what is your favorite moment in The Color of Money? If you had to pick a scene or a line or an action or whatever, what is your favorite part of this movie?
I mean, I don't know. There's so much. Almost every time Tom Cruise does karate with a pool stick. I really love Tom Cruise's performance in this movie. And so sorry if I'm going a little bit long-winded and not being able to pick out a specific moment.
No, by all means.
I think most of the stuff is just like the really like incredible rack zooms with dolly pans and or like whip pans. And then they're like constantly cutting, and the way that the movie is put together to where all of those editorial choices are all swinging into then a perpetual motion of the opposite direction to where you just get this intense kineticism. Like, I think the very first time that I watched this movie, like, that was the thing that stuck out to me the most. But then whenever I was going back and doing research, and I was just like, was this a great Tom Cruise movie, or is this more of a Paul Newman movie?
Well, that's the thing.
Everybody got nominated for an Oscar for this movie but Tom Cruise, even though I think Tom Cruise is putting in some of his best work. But people didn't know him other than cocky, snot-nosed kid.
Yeah, and it was Paul Newman and Scorsese, you know, like they were teaming up for this. So a lot was on the table.
Well, that's like the crazy thing, because, Mike, I was thinking about conversations that you and I have had on Mazes and Monsters and stuff over on Hanks for the Memories. And like,
yeah, recent conversations.
This movie, I feel like, sets itself up. Like, the first character that we see is Paul Newman talking to his wife or his girlfriend, that bartender there, right? We're introduced to him. What's going on is behind him, Tom Cruise is showing off, and like he's like this cocky young nine-ball player who's like taking the town by storm.
Taking John Turturro by storm.
Oh, yeah. A baby John Turturro, absolutely.
Can you hop?
The movie kind of becomes Cruise's movie for a while, and then he disappears. And I'm like, oh, right, no, like the main character has always been Paul Newman. Like, it's always been his movie. Yeah. But it's not until Cruise leaves, you're like, oh, right, like this is his movie.
Yeah.
Because for a while, and I think there's a little bit of the bias on our part because we're watching for Cruise Club, but it's like his energy is just so great and so over the top and so extreme that it's hard not to think of it as a Tom Cruise movie, even though Paul Newman is top billed. Paul Newman's the one who won Best Actor, and the sort of the back half of this is all him down on his luck and then coming back and making a run.
Yeah, I mean, it is a sequel to his movie, too, you know, after all, like his character is the one that comes back. But I mean, Tom Cruise almost steals the show here entirely, so it's kind of at Newman's benefit that he disappears for a while. But it's interesting because this was like the first time that really sank into me, like hit me hard, was like, oh wait, like I'm kind of being glamored by Tom Cruise's character the way that Paul Newman is. Like, he's really, you know, I'm almost seduced by him and stuff, so like I'm paying sort of more attention to him and everything. But like, from the start, this is Paul Newman's movie, like through and through. Like, everything is building on his character.
I mean, I don't think Tom Cruise ever takes the movie over. I definitely think that he brings like that intense energy to it and definitely draws your attention away from Paul Newman. But that's kind of the point, because if you think about it as like two pieces of a whole, and I'm not saying you need to see the Hustler in order to appreciate Color of Money or vice versa. But I think like every time you see Tom Cruise, and even whenever he's stealing the show, if you kind of like pay attention in the function of how the scene is set up and where the cameras are coming from, it's always from the perspective of Paul Newman perceiving that character.
Mm, okay.
And I mean, he even says it in the movie. He's like, it's like looking in a mirror, because he's seeing this younger version of himself, which is kind of like, you know, Paul Newman's How Stella Got Her Groove Back. But it's like, beautiful man, it's Tom Cruise, and that Tom Cruise is going like, this is that young guy who I used to be, and seeing that kid is making me hungry again. All that over-the-topness and all that stuff that he's seeing and all that stuff that's frustrating, he's like, fuck, man. It's like, you're me, but I'm fucking better than you, because now I'm chilled and cool, and like I can, like, I know how to grift properly now, and I'm not going to get in my own way. Whenever Tom Cruise disappears, it's like whenever you're watching the movie, and I'd be interested to see your perspective on this, but like you're watching it and you see him go away and you're like, oh, did Paul Newman just fucking quit? And it's like, no, it's like him going like, I got beat real bad, and now I know what I don't need to do. And I'm not doing this with you anymore, kid. I'm getting me.
It's like a training montage or something.
Yeah, it's like if you were watching like Creed, but then like halfway through, Rocky's just goes, nah, fuck it, I still got some. There's still something left in the basement. I'm taking it out.
Well, there's that line in the middle of the movie where he's laying in bed. He's like, it's like watching home videos. It's like, this is me as a younger me. And I think the movie shows, does a really good job of showing his growth or maturity, that at the end, when they get to that Atlantic City tournament, and they don't go up against each other in the finals, which I didn't realize until the sort of the twist of that comes. But I was like, this movie is building toward this showdown between the two. Like, when they separate, and then right. it's clear that they're both heading there, like, they're going to meet up at some point. And I was like, oh, it's got to be the finals, because this is a movie, and that's the movie cliche. But then you realize that they get matched up in whatever, like, the quarterfinals or whatever, because Tom Cruise has the idea to bet on Paul Newman's character, bet on him to win, and then he throws the game. And so when he shows up to the hotel room and is like, here's your cut, you know, thanks, like, I threw the game, that could be, like, a devastating, like, life-ending or career-ending moment where he's just like, this kid, like, my, you know, I still got it. Like, I'm still, you know, the student has not become the master. I still got it. And then Cruise is like, oh, no, like, I don't know if you understood, old man, but, like, I let you win. And I feel like that could have been, like, the end of everything. But for him to sort of dust himself off and be like, no, fuck you. Like, this is, I'm still going to get my own. That's the maturity here of, like you were saying, Greg, like the adult grifter, the adult, like the guy who has seen it all, knows how to handle it all, and is not going to be fazed by a kid who one day might be the best pool player of all time, but still for now, you know, it's Paul Newman's world.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to, like, overly spoil the end, even though, I mean, I feel like we're discussing it pretty openly.
Yeah.
Whenever you see the end and then there's that freeze frame shot before you get any sort of the gratification of the culmination of what you were expecting for the whole movie, and then the credits hit right after that freeze frame. Like, I think that's the movie for me, in a sense. And so that might be one of my favorite parts, because it's all about how it doesn't matter who wins right now, because this grifting game doesn't end. Like, he's like, don't put your money in the bank, kid, because it's just always going to be switching hands.
I'm glad that you brought up Creed, because I was also thinking sort of like the end of Rocky 3, the beginning of Rocky 4. It's like that third fight. Like, we don't know who wins. It doesn't matter who wins.
Right.
But it's just, it's these two guys going head to head, and it's for them.
For sure. Yeah. No, I mean, Color Money is a crazy masterpiece that I think so many people overlook, because, like, Scorsese, like, I mean, obviously Scorsese, I'm pretty sure, thinks it's a very good movie, but I mean, he thought of himself as that hired gun. And so I don't think people think about how fucking devastatingly great this movie is in the pantheon of Martin Scorsese movies, but I fucking love this movie.
Yeah.
You having seen that for the very first time recently, whenever that turn came, because obviously it kind of blindsides you, and you kind of, as the audience, like, feel that punch to the gut that Paul Newman
yeah.
had, whenever you went back to think about the movie, was there a part of you going, like, when did Tom Cruise start grifting him? Did he start grifting him at the very beginning of the movie, or did the student become the master?
You know, I didn't think about, I mean, I was thinking about that a little bit, like, how long has this been going on, but I didn't think about the connection to a movie by an actor that we all love, to Matchstick Men, right? Where, like, that whole movie is a grift against Cage. Spoilers for Matchstick Men.
Right.
But, like, you know, from the, like, at some point in that movie, whether it's before the movie starts, or one of the first scenes, or maybe the scene where they're having dinner with the guy who they think is the mark or whatever, but Sam Rockwell decides, I'm going to take Cage for everything he's worth, and he brings in Alison Lohman. It's those kind of, like, the long con where it really makes you wonder, like, who really had the upper hand all along? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, let me know if we're going too far down this rabbit hole, but
no,
like,
I don't think so, because that's the whole, like, point of podcasts.
Think about it in the context of what Paul Newman's teaching him, and, like, you can think about it in the context of The Prestige, or however, like, a trick is performed or a con is performed. Paul Newman tells Tom Cruise, he's like, the stupider you fucking look, like, wear your stupid shirt that has your name on it, like, act like this asshole, draw this, like, aw shucks attention. So there's, like, those scenes where he's, like, wearing the goofy glasses and acting like an earnest idiot. But at the same time, if you go back and watch The Color of Money again, he gets Paul Newman's attention by being this loud, obnoxious idiot who seems
yeah.
like he doesn't know what he's doing, which is the whole point of a grift. And so
yeah.
it's like, is he always trying to, like, rip off Fast Eddie, because he knows Fast Eddie because he's super into pool and, like, had heard the stories of this dude from around? Or, like, was he, like, legitimately an idiot? Because just, like, that demeanor in that final scene, whenever he's like, oh, you want to play for, like, the envelope? And, like, he has revealed, like, the trick that he's pulled on Paul Newman. Tom Cruise's character is way cooler and more mellow, and you don't pick that up in a couple of weeks hustling people in pool halls, you know?
Yeah, that's a very interesting take that had never occurred to me before, because I just assumed, I suppose, that I was taking the movie pretty much at its face value. Because I don't know, I feel like usually in a movie that's like a long con, there's more of a big reveal, I guess. It's more of a devastating hit, where this kind of felt to me like, oh, you should be proud that I learned all your tricks and used them on the master kind of situation. That's the way it felt played to me this time too. Vince and his girlfriend, they ended up like working off each other and together more. And I think, you know, in that last leg to Atlantic City, he gained a little more sense of fashion from her, probably. I do like that take. I think it's worth exploring over a rewatch.
I don't necessarily believe it 100% myself. It's just I always try to like divorce myself from having seen it, but also like having like knowing what's coming. And like, I'm curious off of those first perspectives of seeing that movie for the first time, like, what are you guys getting? Because it kills my brain every time that fleeting thought enters my mind going like, but when did the grift start for Tom Cruise?
Like, I've seen this a lot, but not for a long time. And so I've seen a bunch of con movies since. And to be quite honest, like, it didn't even occur to me I was watching a grifting flick, you know? Like, I always just kind of took this more as like a pool flick, which then in turn maybe felt more like a sports movie, you know, to be quite honest. Like, it kind of follows those same beats and stuff. But it is, you know, it's all about the con.
Well, yeah, and I mean, if you think about it in the concept of the movie, like, the movie, again, like, is the perspective of Paul Newman. So you are going in thinking you're going to be watching the guy from The Hustler.
Right.
And you know The Hustler means like a grifter. You see him unknowingly grifted. And so the fact that like it doesn't have like the sixth sense like doorknob handle and like people walking past him after like somebody going like, I see dead people, you're dead too. That's kind of like the subtle point of the film, which is why like you don't care who wins at the end. Like, the movie lives between spaces for those kinds of analysis because it has a subtlety to it. The fact that you get that gut punch, you don't need the revelation, because at that point you just know that they got Fast Eddie somehow. But it's just like a curious exploration that I always want to like rewatch the movie and try to like find a definitive answer for.
I think that's fascinating.
It's cool too, because the way he handles that shows growth of his character, because when Forrest Whitaker takes him out, you know, like he breaks down, he has a breakdown, but then
it's his downfall in The Hustler.
Yeah, exactly. It's like reliving one of his worst moments. And when he gets taken by his student, he's composed and he kind of retaliates. Like, he quits the tournament in full view of everyone, hands back the money, and like makes a statement without saying anything really, and so shows his hand at that point too, and all bets are off. It's a very exciting ending.
Well, that, and like, I also just love rewatching it because you always remember, but you don't ever think about the scenes whenever like you see everybody hustling around and you're just like, oh my god, Forrest Whitaker. You're like, oh my god, Iggy Pop. And it's just like a who's who from like everything just like showing up all over this movie.
Real quick, Greg mentioned offhandedly one of my favorite things, that's going to be my favorite moment. I love that Vince shirt that he's wearing. You know, I love Sleepaway Camp because I love the Judy t-shirt that Judy wears. I just love when characters are so full of themselves to wear, or maybe it's part of the con, who knows, but to wear a shirt with their name on it. I mean, it's his work uniform, I guess.
I was watching it again because I just remember how fucking hilarious it is that he wears that Vince shirt, like, in and out of work. Did you see any of the other employees wearing shirts that
Yes. Yeah, yeah, there's, I think one there's guy one. Named Lou, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's selling the baby swinger, whatever, and he calls out to somebody. It's either him or the guy who's yelling at him to get back to work. One of them also has the same shirt on. And I was like, okay, I guess that's normal.
Well, I thought it was weird because I used to work at KB Toys, not Child World, but to have gotten my
own
name.
Is Child World real?
It was real at one point, okay. Yeah. But I was thinking to have gotten a shirt with my name on it would have been incredible, and there's no way that the company would have flipped for that. So I almost wonder if that was an invention of the film. I don't know if anyone wants to go research Child World employee uniforms for us, but it was kind of cool.
So, Mike, what's your favorite moment in the movie? Is it something that we've talked about, or is it something else that we have not talked about yet?
It's so hard to choose. Like, there are so many great moments, but I noticed one particular shot that I wanted to mention this time that I'll put in for my favorite moment, I suppose. The camera work in this film is incredible. You know, it even gets to a level where the editing and everything, it becomes almost surreal at times. But there's one moment where, well, Vince is definitely pissing off Eddie. And I think it's when he chases him out of the pool hall that one night. He doesn't want his girlfriend there and he's trying to impress everybody and he's just pissing off Eddie. He goes outside and the camera follows them across the street. Eddie gets into his car and he starts driving away and the camera is fixed on Eddie driving away. And it's as if like the camera guy like steadicammed across the street and like sat on a rig attached to the car and they started driving away and stuff. It was just like remarkable. I had to rewind it like two or three times to sort of fix it in my head. Like, did I just see that? Really cool moment. So I don't know if you guys noticed any of that.
I'm an editor by day, and so it's like the editing in this movie and the cinematography in this movie are just like otherworldly. Like, if you could ever just watch a movie and learn by osmosis in order to like be able to shoot and edit like that, I would just tell everybody to watch The Color of Money.
I love it.
I was almost getting a Bringing Out the Dead vibe here, too. I was like, wow, Scorsese tapped back into that later on, that same type of energy for a completely different topic, like a totally different. And that just made me think, like, wow, you know, I played a lot of pool after watching this movie with my friends and everything, and it was always a very chill and relaxed time, and this movie makes it feel like extreme at moments, you know.
Yeah.
It's super intense, and like that is just master strokes.
I was reading that after The Hustler came out, there was a huge boon to like pool hall culture and people like wanting to pick up billiards and people buying billiard tables and stuff, and they thought that it might happen again with The Color of Money, and then it did.
Yeah. You know, I finally, after years and years and years, convinced my parents to give me their pool table. I was like, when I moved out, I was like, I want one thing. I want the pool table. My dad said no. And then eventually, you know, I finally broke him down enough to get it. So now it's in my basement. So, like, while I was watching this movie, after I watched it, like, everything that since I started this movie, all I wanted to do was go down there and just play nine ball against myself, because it just looks so cool. Like, it's so cool.
Just practice. Just start reading the paper in the morning on your pool table like Fast Eddie, you know.
Yeah.
Having your coffee and your eggs there, too.
That's how Tom Cruise was able to do all of the trick shots in the movie.
Which is bananas.
Oh, that's crazy.
To me. I was thinking, you know, I'm not good at pool. Like, I'm very bad at pool. I wonder how many takes there were. I know that this movie came in under schedule and under budget. Like, Scorsese's like, no, look, I can do this. But
right.
I want to know, like, how many shots they wasted, because, like, they had to sink three in a row in a take or whatever. They're all playing. Like, there's no cutting away. Like, the only time, like, there's one shot, I think, that, like, when Tom Cruise, like, does that, like, double jump or something, he didn't do that.
He jumps the balls and hits them in order. The only professional pool shot.
And the camera's moving all around the place,
yeah,
too.
Like,
so that's screws
so
up halfway
remarkable.
Through a take. You got to reset just for the camera.
The only actor that I think maybe wasn't a good pool player was Forrest Whitaker, which I know that he's supposed to be this great player, but like we don't actually see him hitting the balls. Like the camera is like below the table, and I was wondering, I was like, maybe he's not a good pool player. I was so impressed by the fact that like both Tom Cruise and Paul Newman and everybody they're playing against, which I think are like actual real, you know, pool guys and like legends,
yeah,
and
feels
whatever.
That way.
Like they're sinking three or four shots in a row. I get that as a professional pool player, but like this is Tom Cruise the actor. This is Paul Newman the actor. And they're sinking like not necessarily the easiest shots, but like doing it in a way where like the cue ball winds up where it's supposed to be, and it's just remarkable just thinking about the fundamentals of it all.
I mean, there's a very high incentive to be good at pool whenever somebody's going to pay you several million dollars to be good at pool in a movie.
It's true.
You ask Tom Cruise, you're like, hey, do you know how to ride a motorcycle or jump out of a plane? He's like, yeah. Like, could you do that in our movie? They're like, yeah, I don't need training. I got it, guys. Because I think Paul Newman himself became an enthusiast after The Hustler. It's kind of like riding a bike. Like, it's still there a little bit. And so I'm sure,
sure.
He just brought up to be good at it. But yeah, like a lot of the supporting cast is just professional pool players they hired to be in the film.
Yeah, and I feel like if you have like a set number of shots that you need to learn and you can repeat that over and over again, it's a little easier than having to just learn the entire game and play it freestyle, right? Because like every shot is set up, so he knows exactly what he needs to do. And so after a while, you just get it down and everything like that. But it's still, you know, I'm not trying to take anything away from it. It's still incredibly impressive. But Joey, it made me think, as you were just saying, you know, I used to get impressed when, you know, an actor would suddenly burst into song and have an amazing voice or be able to dance, and you're like, well, you know, they should be triple threats, like that's their job and everything, but then they whip out a skill like this, or Hanks with his
juggling.
It's like, well, when did they pick that up? Like, where does that come from? But yeah, I mean, you just pick these things up as actors.
Like an incredible skill at a sport, like he mastered this sport in order to play it. It's kind of like that time Tom Hanks juggled.
You know, same thing.
I mean, I grew up and I had like 7-year-old friends that could juggle, and I was like, oh shit, I can't juggle, but yeah, look at you. You can just do that.
Over on Magic Mike's, our Channing Tatum podcast, like we learned, like his first movie was Coach Carter, and like he learned how to play basketball, which feels like maybe you should learn how to play, maybe you should sort of know kind of how to play basketball, but like he got paid to learn how to play basketball for that movie. It's weird. Like Hollywood is a weird place. You just like, hey, you're in this basketball movie, you're in this pool movie, like learn how to do this. Like we'll make sure it works or whatever. Like it's a fascinating place.
Be a superhero and we'll pay you to have like an incredible body and be in shape and get your life together.
I had the fortunate position to find myself like having drinks with James Franco one time.
Sonny himself, Joey. Sonny.
Yeah. Almost exclusively talked to him about the film Flyboys.
Okay.
He learned how to fly for a World War II plane for that film.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah. Huh. He's just like, yeah, no, I went to like the flight sims. I got to take up like Mustangs. And like, we were like talking about like World War II planes. And I was like, this is neat.
So Greg, on the other side of the coin, is there a scene in here? What's your least favorite part of The Color of Money?
That's a tough one. Like, I love this movie credits to credits, like the opening with Martin Scorsese's voiceover to like the freeze. Yeah. Frame. Like, I can't think of a bad beat inside of there. I guess it's like, it's only like the one of the only things that it sounds weird to say time has been unkind to it because it's an unkind moment in the movie. But like whenever Paul Newman like pins Tom Cruise's girlfriend in the bathroom, well, this is a little bit of a cringer, but like he's not doing it necessarily sexually. Like obviously what he's saying is like very sexually aggressive, but it's like being illustrative of a point going like, stop doing this shit. And yeah, like he's trying to force her into it. But I guess that would be the only thing, but at the same time, it's like, it serves to the story and the character.
Because she is, and it's so difficult to talk about this stuff, but I think he sort of has a point. Like, she is not coming on to him, but like when he walks into the hotel, he's also walking into their hotel room a lot, just like, hey guys, I'm here. You know, she's taking a shower with the door open, and we see her in the reflection topless, and like, she does nothing to cover up, even though she sees that he sees her.
But again, is that part of the grift? Is maybe like that part, yeah, of it, to create this distraction, to maybe lure?
Yeah.
Their relationship is complex because he thinks from the start that it's business, but she might not quite get that or might be trying to run her own game. And they have that conversation in the car too, you know, where she talks about robbing Vince and the whole thing, and it makes him look even, you know, more like a flake. And he's like, oh, my mom has the same necklace. And it's like, well, I stole it from your mom and you never found out, and I'm gonna stay with you. Like, maybe there is a connection there, right? But they're reading it in different directions or something.
Yeah, I mean, what do you mean about it? Why do I have to go first? This doesn't just seem
fair. Because
fair.
You're the guest. I'm trying to make you say, because I also don't, you know, I'm so hot off this movie that I don't really know. The one thing that I noticed, and I think it's not a bad thing about the movie, just that the movie settles into what it is, but I think that the beginning has so much energy, and then it sort of slows down a little bit. I mean, the movie could never sustain the amount of energy that's in the beginning, I don't think, and I think it makes sense why it slows down, but there was sort of like a, not a lull, but I was like, oh, like, okay, like, this is not quite the, like, high-strung bravado that we're going to have. Like, it's not like a two-hour, like, music video. Like, we're going to sort of settle into a plot, which is not a bad thing. Like, it works for the movie, but I was sort of not caught off guard, but a little bit sort of like, oh, okay, I guess we're just slowing things down here a little bit. So that's what stood out to me. Not that it's bad, because there's not a thing that I don't really like about this movie, other than some of the aggressiveness towards Mary Elizabeth Master Antonio. But like, it was that moment where I was like, oh, because there was this vision where I was just like, oh, this is going to be like a pool equivalent of Crank, like balls to the wall, like just high octane action, whatever, for 2 hours. And it slows down, and it makes sense why it slows down, but that's just sort of what I thought in my mind, like, oh, okay, this is going to be a sort of a different thing than what we just had.
Yeah, well,
opening on an action scene in a movie, and then you settle into the plot. Like, they go like, hey, this is how high we're going to get, this is where our peak is, now we're going to settle in, but don't worry, you know where the peak is now, so you know we're going to like ebb and flow. Like, I think that's just a kind of a movie. If we're splitting hairs, I'll give you that one, just because, yeah, there's not a bad thing to say about Color of Money.
It's hard to find one, yeah. Mike, what about you? Is there something about this movie that doesn't really work for you?
There's actually one thing that kind of did stand out, to be honest, and I wasn't expecting it to. You know, when they hit the road, right? Like, I don't get a great sense of like where they stop, like what town they're in, what city they're in, that kind of situation. I don't know. That's just something maybe you get more in a more traditional road film, which I don't think this is trying really to be. It just is part of its circumstance, right? Like, they have to hit the road to go to AC, but it never really feels like we're on the road, we're stopping at motels, like we're going, they do all that stuff. For me, I just kind of got lost on the road every once in a while, going like, where am I in America? Like, where am I on the highway right now? What state am I in exactly? When they do hit AC, I'm almost like, oh, AC, we're here. Like, it's kind of like a breath of fresh air or something. We're at our destination. We finally made it. So, I mean, that is such a minor gripe, like, to be quite honest with you, but
at the same time, like, cause I mean, like, I never thought about it or really cared in watching the movie, but also at the same time, like, you're watching the movie and enjoying things, and like the first place they go, like, is now like defunct, and like people are making fun of Paul Newman whenever he's asking if something's still there. They're like, where else would it be? You strongly get a sense that Paul Newman has all of the wherewithal of where they are, but it doesn't matter because you're just going through all of his old haunts.
Yeah. I don't know that like the setting, because it's just I don't know that the setting really matters, because it's just pool hall in a small city or a small town or whatever, where like maybe the best guy there is going to go to AC at the end or whatever. It's quite literally not about the destination, but it's about the journey, not the destination. It's just sort of like
Right.
a we're here, we're gonna sort of grift until we can't grift anymore, then get out of town before we get chased out of town and do it again, 30 miles down the road.
Yeah, because it's not like we see every place they stop in, you know? And I'm saying like we just see the key pool hall moments, right? The ones where they learn their lessons and those kinds of things, and like perfect their grips and stuff. So doesn't even really bother me, but like I had to really pull a tooth to find one, so.
No. So now, Greg, I have an important question for you. This is something that we talk about from most episodes, except we forgot on Top Gun, the other podcast, the Tom Hanks podcast. There's what we've learned from the IMDb trivia is that a lot of these roles that one of the Toms got, the other one was considered for or auditioned for or was offered and said no or whatever.
Like a Stallone-Schwarzenegger partnership, always entwined in the same
Yeah.
film, whichever one get it.
And also, Mike, what Brian's talking about over on High School Summer Party, that he's doing a lot of these 80s movies now, and like Nicolas Cage is always mentioned in like almost all these movies, like he was up for the part or was auditioned or considered or whatever. So now this might be a weird, difficult question for you, but Greg, if Tom Hanks was cast in the lead here, if he was Vince in this movie, how would this movie be different? What would this movie look like if Tom Hanks was the Tom Cruise part? Or if that is such an alien concept, you can't imagine this movie with Tom Hanks in the lead, what character do you think he could play in this movie to sort of, fit in this world? This year, like 1986 Tom Hanks.
I mean, I definitely think the movie would be more of a comedy. I don't think Tom Hanks, like, I love Tom Hanks. I think he's one of the most wonderful actors in the entire world. But at the same time, like, I think 1986 Tom Hanks would have difficulty honing in that high energy to be the Vince character, where I think Tom Cruise really succeeded because he had a certain level of gravitas to it, whereas Tom Hanks would probably be playing it more broadly for humor. And so I
Okay.
think it would definitely like brighten up the movie, despite the fact that it's like a pretty skeezy film.
Yeah.
If you want me to double down on this, if I was going to see if Tom Hanks was a different character, I would substitute, what if we put Nicolas Cage in the lead role? And yes, I think that would successfully be it.
Oh,
The
sure.
fuck out of that movie. I don't know. Yeah, I feel like, because I mean, there's only really three characters in this movie. If anything, I think maybe Tom Hanks could do the John Turturro role.
Yeah, that's what I
Okay,
was
yeah.
thinking, right? Just because they kind of looked alike at the time.
Well, just like, yeah, you give him kind of like that dejected Tom Hanks-ness that he can do, but that's the only note he gets to hit, where he's just kind of like a bitter, like grumpy, but like he's got that bravado, but he's also like shitty at it. Like, just picture Money Pit Tom Hanks running around.
Yeah, I think that's it. I don't know if we can sort of build on that, because I agree with you that I don't think Tom Hanks, and I think that's what we're learning. Like I think early before they were like fully formed into who they would become, I think it was easier to sort of swap and be like, oh, it would be like this or that or whatever. But like,
Yeah.
I also, I and not to, this is not a dig on Tom Hanks. I think it's just more of the roles that we're seeing. I think it's easier to put Cruise in the Hanks roles, sort of, than it is vice versa. And I think that's just, they're just different paths.
I mean, like, I have no doubt that that's a true statement. I just can't even like fathom it, because I'm trying to think of it in the opposite direction. Because like Joe versus the Volcano is one of my favorite movies of all time, and if you put Tom Cruise in that movie, I don't think I would remotely enjoy it as much.
Well, it's weird, Joey. I feel like what I'm learning by doing two actors at once, right?
Yeah.
And doing the comparison thing is how different they are. Like how much
Yeah.
I think even more so down the line that they're gonna do roles tailored for them specifically. No one else could really do what they're gonna do eventually. And I think we're feeling it earlier with Cruise, right? I think that he could probably do a little more of the Hanks stuff early on, but that Hanks kind of can't
Well,
do, he
because
doesn't
I don't
have
think
like
Hanks is
that kind
Hanks
of.
yet. I think that's the
Yeah,
thing,
that's
right?
the
Like,
thing, right? He's not fully grown. He's not as formed.
he's becoming Hanks, but he's not. He's just sort of like a goofy, kind of likable comedy guy, which I think Cruise can pull off, like in the parts of Risky Business that are a comedy. Like, he can do this likable, charming type of character. There's still not a lot of act. I mean, not, Cage stands alone, and Shia, I think, is kind of close-ish at points to Cage, but like, I don't know that there's a lot of actors who could do the Tom Cruise roles, like, at any point, like, either today or in the 80s or whenever. Like, he brings that energy to it, that it's just this, like,
Yeah.
singular performance.
Yeah, he's got the crazy stamina.
I mean, it would be interesting to watch, like, Tom Hardy in early Tom Cruise roles, like, picture him in
Oh.
in The Color of Money, you'd be like, I don't know, because like Hardy can go like wacky and into weird places with a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm sure you guys have read the same stuff that I have about The Color of Money, but it's like Paul Newman said the best note that he ever got on acting was from Martin Scorsese. He goes, you know what the trick to being funny is? Don't try to be funny. And I think Tom Cruise certainly does that. And that's why a lot of that stuff is funny, because he's playing it true to the character, which makes it humorous in the circumstance that they've written it. And I do feel like a Tom Hardy or somebody would definitely kind of do that same thing where he's like, okay, I'm going to pick this accent. It's going to be this. I'm going to make my own Vince shirt because I'm a maniac. But then like the truth to the moments would create the humor. And I feel like Hardy would definitely double down in there. Whereas I feel like Hanks would be like, what can I do that's funny?
Right. Like, what face can I make, or how can I juggle, or whatever? You know, I think building on that is that, like, when Tom Cruise in this movie is dancing, that's a fun scene, but, like, he's not doing it to be funny. He's doing it to, like, be, like, this pompous asshole. Like, right. He's just showing off. And, like, it's funny because he's so committed to it, that he's so into what he's doing and so into himself that it's this radiant joy in a way, because you're like, who is this guy being a samurai, dancing around, doing all this? Like, it's just fun to watch.
I mean, I feel like this movie in a way is kind of like so many Tom Cruise movies boiled into one, where like you see shades of all of these other things that he's brought to all these different characters, and he just put them all into Color of Money.
Actually, so here, Mike, we're going to come back to our how would Hanks be in this if we want to continue on that. But there's another question we asked, Greg. We found a guy on Twitter. Harperfect said, every Tom Cruise character could be renamed Lightning McQueen and not a single thing would change. Do you think Tom Cruise's character in this movie could be named Lightning McQueen? I'm going to say absolutely.
No.
No? Wow.
Really?
Far too ostentatious. It would maybe work if the grift angle was... I really think he's like, by the way, my name's not really Vince. It's Lightning. No, disagree. Top Gun, sure. I can see that one there, but no. I feel like it would be weird to watch The Last Samurai and have them calling The Last Samurai Lightning McQueen.
Well, when we get there, we'll maybe say no. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm a little torn.
TJ Mackey being called Lightning McQueen.
You know, I don't know if I agree that he... I don't know if he could be called Lightning McQueen. I think he's got the bravado of a character named Lightning McQueen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You with the vampire, whenever, you know, Lightning McQueen comes out and turns Brad Pitt into a vampire for eternity.
Mike, do you think that Tom Hanks could fit into this movie?
I mean, you could squeeze him in here somewhere, but, like, no, I agree with everything that's sort of been said about the lead. You know, I think what would be interesting is if somehow you could take Tom Hanks from, like, now or put him in 1986 and have him play the Paul Newman role, that would be kind of interesting. I would love to see digital wizardry in the future pull that off. I mean, no, actually, I would not like to see them desecrate this movie in any way, but I'm just saying, like, that's sort of where my mind started going. I was like, Paul Newman and modern Hanks kind of have a similar thing happening.
Or if you put 1986 Tom Hanks in Color of Money, but then you got today's Will Ferrell in old man makeup as Paul Newman.
Oh, wow.
Full comedy.
Like, just like, it's a comedy of errors that things do not go well, and then all of a sudden he's good at the Atlantic City, the nine ball challenge.
Let me ask you guys a question. So you guys are doing Hanks and Cruise in tandem right now. Are you guys obviously going from very first in filmography up to contemporary times?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you guys around the same time? They kind of came up around the same time. They're kind of around the same age, to where like you guys are around 1986-ish for Hanks as well?
Yes. So Hanks started, I think, a year earlier. I think He Knows You're Alone was 1980, and Tom Cruise's first one, Endless Love, was 81. We are now at a point, because to date, Tom Cruise has something like 45 or so acting credits, and Tom Hanks has like 65. Right. So we're at a point right now where we're never going to catch up Hanks to Cruise. Like, Cruise is already like a little bit more in the future. I think we're like 85-ish, 84, 85, 86 for Hanks. Like, what year is Bachelor Party? Was that 84, 85? Oh, no. Man with One Red Shoe was last week.
Oh, yeah. That's 85? 84?
Yeah, so we're right around the same point. So, like, it's a lot of the same, not type of movie, but the same kind of, like, when we're looking at who could be cast, like, it feels like both types of movies, like, Carrie Fisher's name is being thrown around a lot, and, like, Nicolas Cage and Charlie Sheen and all these different people who are, like, because they're just, like, the contemporaries of the time, you know what I mean? So,
well, what I was going to ask is, so early in both of their filmographies, but obviously having had a big chunk, do you guys currently have a favorite over Hanks or Cruise, just based off what you've rewatched?
Of as an actor or as the movies?
Movies and actors.
I think in general, I'm sort of siding with early Cruise.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Tom Cruise Hit Factory is stronger than Tom Hanks, even though I love a lot of Tom Hanks movies. I just think like after like he got his footing and started to make movies, like he got that one hit and then he's just like, okay, and now I'm only going to put my name on great stuff.
The reason we're doing this is because we went through Keanu, which was like really rocky. We went through Charlize, which was really rocky. And now here we are with, of course, we're like, we want to watch good movies. So we're watching actors that we know, for the most part, only do great things. And I feel like so far we're seeing like Tom Cruise is like, I can be this like high energy, intense action guy in different kinds of movies. And like, that's just who I'm going to be. And I'm going to sort of vary a little bit. But I think what's going to be interesting about Tom Hanks, especially as we close in on like 89, 90, and then get into like 92, 93, and then there's like that like 9 year run or whatever, where he makes like 10 of the biggest movies of the 90s. And
Right.
I think there's going to be more diversity there. I think it's going to be more interesting to see the different kind of stuff. I mean, like, I like, on average, I think I'm going to like the Cruise movies more just because I like action movies more than dramas generally. But I just think that there's going to be diversity in the Tom Hanks things to an extent, like we saw with Cage. Like, Cage did every genre except for maybe Western, but Cage did everything. I think Hanks is going to be closer to that than Tom Cruise is, but Tom Cruise is going to make these movies like six of the best action movies of all time are in the same franchise or whatever. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, no, it's a tough one. I knew I was asking a loaded question. That's why I figured it would be good for
What about
plot.
you? Do you have a preference? Have you done a Tom Hanks marathon?
No, I mean I have like a whole one planned out called T. Hanks for the Memories,
Yep.
and I thought it would be really good. And I just show some of the Tom Hanks movies that I love relatively regularly, which is why like I've never done like an Arnold Schwarzenegger one at the theater because it would be really easy to do an Arnold Schwarzenegger marathon, and I really like him. But it's like, I show these movies kind of regularly, so it's also kind of hard to put it together because then you're not necessarily surprising anybody with giving them like that big, like, oh, this is the movie you were waiting for. They're like, oh, I saw that. I saw True Lies last month.
We saw Mike and I saw Hey Arnold up in the Yonkers Draft House, and
Yeah.
that was a cool five movie programming thing. But it is difficult because the Draft House is cool in that you can just be like, oh, like shit, like this month we're just like, just because you as the programmer want to watch True Lies on the big screen, like you can make that happen. And I think that that's sort of, I guess, in a way that I never really thought about.
Incredibly self-indulgent. Indulgent and like just delightfully lucky on my part.
No, but
Whenever
that's
people are like, "How do I
awesome.
get your job?" and I was like, "Fucking pure luck." Realized that every time
Yeah.
I sit up there with a microphone, I go, "Hey, I'm fully aware that I'm the luckiest guy, and I'm no different than the other 200 people sitting in front of me. I just got lucky." But anybody could do it. We all love movies the same way,
Yeah.
and like whenever like you're gonna show something like weird or cool, people are like, "Oh, I know this," and I'm very excited about it. And I'm like, "See, we're all just pals hanging out."
I never thought about the two-edged sword of it all, is that like if you show True Lies, then maybe that like prevents you from doing an Arnold marathon. Like it's not necessarily black and white like that, but like, oh, I've shown a handful of the movies that I would want to show for this marathon, so maybe I shouldn't do it because like you're saying, they just saw it last month or 6 months ago or whatever. And like, do they want to, are they going to be disappointed if they spend $40 on a mystery ticket and then
Yeah.
see a movie that they just paid $12 to see, a month or two ago?
Yeah. I mean, like whenever we did the WrestleMania, it was like, we're going to show Big Trouble in Little China because we have to show Big Trouble in Little China, but people aren't going to be very excited because it's not like Big Trouble in Little China is hard to find on the big screen if you have a draft house in your town.
You could also maybe do like Arnold versus Stallone. So, you don't have to show True Lies. You could show other movies and you don't have to show as many. You show like two of each and put
Yeah,
them
like
head to head.
Junior, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, all the bangers.
Well, they each made a comedy, they each made some
Yeah.
action.
I think that's also a testament to Cage, is that you were able to do four different Cage marathons and have them all wildly different and still be, like, have the people who love him and love his movies be engaged. Like, there's enough variety there that'd be like, oh, well, like, we showed Face Off in the past, like, we're not going to show Face Off this year, but
Right.
don't worry because there's other good stuff to see.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely part of it. But also, yeah, I mean, like the whole marathon programming thing, you think it's easy, and then like you jot down going, that's going to be a great day. You're like, oh, but no, I kind of want to find some like weird B side that people aren't thinking of. And then
Yeah.
like you go down this weird rabbit hole where you watch way too many movies to find that one movie, and you're like, yeah, perfect. But then like whenever you take out one of like the expected hits, then somebody gets mad at you. And then you start second guessing everything all the time, and you go like, "Oh, which order do you play this in?" Like it just becomes this whole like anxiety game, and like I don't tell anybody those lineups, so you're just like suffering by yourself. And then you just go and stand in front of people going, "Eh, you guys want to beat the shit out of me? I'm sorry." Thanks for the money.
What did you expect? They're mystery movies. Don't get mad at me.
I know, right?
Can you share, or can you give us hints, or do you want to share what the Hanks one could be if you were going to do that one? Because it sounds like you're not going to.
I mean, I definitely, I have a thought for maybe doing it in the fall around Thanksgiving.
That would make sense.
Hanksgiving. But no, I wouldn't say anything on the record.
Joe versus the Volcano.
Just five times in a row.
I've shown Joe versus the Volcano several times on 35mm, and I even had John Patrick Shanley come out to Austin and hang out for a weekend and watch the movie, and it was the fucking best weekend of my life.
That's so cool. So we have one other game to play before we do our, you know, end of show wrap-up kind of stuff. You win a lottery. You win the dream come true. You win a walk-on role, not a major leading role, but you win a walk-on role in The Color of Money. The Stan Lee cameo, the Stamio. How do you put, what scene do you put yourself in? Like, what background character, what guy with one line or two lines or whatever? Where are you in this movie? Are you someone that Tom Cruise beats in pool? Are you someone else? Like, where are you if you're going to give yourself a walk-on role in The Color of Money?
Because, like, part of me wants the tutor role, but the other part of me wants to be the professional pool player that he has to lay down for, but then he comes back and beats the shit out of in the tournament. I feel like it would be good to have that Tom Cruise smirk and also get to play him in two different environments.
Very cool.
Or maybe I would be the weathered old, gosh, it's not Delroy Lindo, it is...
Bill Cobbs?
Yes.
I was so happy when he... It's like, it's Bill Cobbs looking like slightly less old Bill Cobbs, but he looks exactly the same, just like a little bit less gray hair.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be able to do that very well, though, just probably because, like, he looks at Tom Cruise like Tom Cruise ain't shit, and, like, every single take I'd probably just be smiling like a fucking idiot.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool, like, he's just like a, I've seen all this shit before, you're not impressing me, but yeah, I think it would be hard to not smile and be like, I can't, I'm looking at Tom Cruise.
I'd be curious to listen to this podcast if I wasn't your guest, and if your guest picked, just goes, oh, I can pull down the Newman role.
Oh, well, that's what I was going to say. No, I'm just kidding.
we try to not do, like, the main recasting, because I feel like that's, like, everybody would want to be Tom Cruise or Paul Newman or whoever, but, like, I think it's fun to just sort of be, like, that background character, the guy in the scene or two, where just like, oh, shit, like, that guy.
Iggy Pop. I'd want to be Iggy Pop. Tom Cruise would have to take my shot of whiskey out of my hand and shoot it back.
And then you just stay Iggy Pop forever. You just become Iggy Pop, so life swap.
I take it back. I think the Forrest Whitaker role would probably be the most fun, because he's got, like, that one really good, like, short monologue about how he was, like, in medical testing with electroshock.
Yeah.
And then, like, you see his facade drop for a quick sec, and then, like, Paul Newman gets all pissed off at him, but, like, Cruise shows up, obviously. But, you get to, like, get to play with it a little bit.
And obviously Forrest Whitaker, an 80s Cage Club connection, because he was in Fast Times.
Fast Times.
Cage was in for 15 seconds or whatever. All right, Mike, who would you be? How would you Stan Lee yourself into The Color of Money?
I feel like I've done something similar to this before, but I caught it this time, so I want to go. I'm going really obscure. I'm going to be the announcing voice at the pool.
Oh, okay.
At the pool contest in Atlantic City. So, like, every time, you know, he announces whatever, the winner, and be like, Eddie Folsom has forfeited the game. That's my voice.
Cool.
So when you look in the credits, you got to look close. I mean, what the hell? You could probably just patch a few sentences together from, you know, all these podcasts I've done. You don't even need to call me into the booth.
No, yeah, Mike, I've got enough. Like, I could, you know, they did the Barack Obama speech generator or whatever. Like, I have the Mike Manzi speech generator all queued up on my computer. Like, you don't have to do any of these shit. Like, just send in your thoughts.
I feel like, yeah, if we ever need, you know, to replace our voice box, they've got a lot to work with.
Absolutely.
To digital materials.
Actually, you reminded me, there is, it's on IMDb under director's cameo that Scorsese's dog is in this movie, that he's the dog that walks by, dog Zoe, and he walks by, or she walks by, in the Atlantic City scene somewhere. I'm going to be the character, and I think it's just because it's a funny, dickish line. I think it's the first character that Tom Cruise plays in Atlantic City, and he beats him real bad, and the guy just goes, I didn't deserve that. He's like, yeah, you did. You deserve that. Real, like, I want to get, like, destroyed, like, not even get a shot off in 11 matches of pool and just be like, come on, man, like, give me a shot. Like, you know, I go all in on the first hand of the World Series of Poker, get busted, and just, I'm gone. But, like, I made it to the show, but I didn't, you know, I didn't get anywhere, but...
Your face going, yeah, you did.
Greg, any other thoughts about The Color of Money before we decide if we want to give this movie any awards, which I'm pretty sure we're going to, but any other thoughts about The Color of Money that you want to talk about?
Man, I feel like I've really gone through a lot of things, so I don't know what I'm leaving unsaid other than that if you've not seen The Color of Money, I don't understand why you're listening to this podcast, but I could not encourage you enough to watch The Color of Money. And after you fall in love with this movie, I highly recommend everybody watch The Hustler, because The Hustler is just like a stone cold masterpiece.
Yep. I had to Google, is Tom Cruise a lefty? Because he's playing pool lefty, and he is a lefty. I was just like, I wonder if he plays pool lefty, or if he's just, he does everything lefty, and he does everything lefty. So I think that was kind of...
dyslexic.
Yeah, which I saw, but thanks to the power of Scientology, that was cured, according to a quick Google search that I did.
It was also that weird thing about that, the pool hall in the movie, the one where they go upstairs. It's one of the first pool halls they go to, like whenever they hit the road trip. Apparently that pool hall is still there, but across the street is the Church of Scientology now.
Huh. What are the odds?
Yep. Fun trip.
What if in every movie that he was ever in, they just opened up a church across the street from one of the places that they shot?
Well, what if they make, you know, a part three and they follow the Vince character and now he's just auditing people outside of pool halls?
I would watch, I guess. I mean, we have to. We're contractually obligated because of this podcast. We have to watch that. So this was nominated for 4 Oscars. It won. Paul Newman won for Best Actor in a Leading Role. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio was nominated for Best Actress in a Supporting Role. Nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Set Decoration. Did not win those 3.
No editing in City is a crime against humanity, though.
Yeah, because the montage, like the pool montages are just so cool. I was actually also thinking, I don't know if either of you watched, I think Mike did, Greg, I don't know if you watched Mr. Show. There's the one sketch or whatever where Bob Odenkirk plays Van Hammersley, who teaches you he teaches you history and science and math and whatever through billiards. And every time I was watching this, I was just cracking up thinking about Van Hammersley teaching, you know, a K-12 education through pool.
It's a game of math and angles.
The other thing, pool thing I was thinking of, especially related to what we've talked about before, is that Charlie Sheen in Deadfall is maybe the devil and he plays pool.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So that's something worth...
But that's after Cage gets a face full of...
That's after
oil?
He gets fried. Yeah, he
oil?
Gets fried
yeah,
to death.
Fried,
yeah. Some other quick trivia about this movie is that apparently the guys who made Doom, the game Doom, named it after Tom Cruise saying, you know, what's in that case? And he just says Doom. So they've apparently confirmed that that's true. Whether or not that's true, that's a cool story. That they're like, Tom Cruise's delivery there named one of the most iconic action franchises, video game franchises of the last 30 years, or ever, really. Paul Newman and wife Joanne Woodward were the first married couple to win his and her Oscar since Vivien Leigh and Laurence Olivier. And Brandon Flowers of The Killers wore a Vince t-shirt for many tour dates. So I was like, I want that shirt. And, you know, Brandon Flowers, I guess, famous Brandon Flowers, did the same thing. So I am jealous and I admire his taste. Mike, do you have any last thoughts about The Color of Money before we go to the Tom Cruise Awards?
It's great. You know, great music, great acting, great camera work, great editing. It's, you know, Scorsese's got a lot of great films, but this is definitely at the top. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. If you have seen it, watch it again.
Very, very true. Second all of that. So we have an email address here on the show, run@cageclub.me. Email in if you've seen this movie, if you like this movie. We also have our Patreon page at patreon.com/cageclub and cageclub.threadless.com if you want to rep your fandom of the Cage Club Podcast Network. Okay, the Tom Cruise Awards, maybe the Golden Sunglasses, who knows?
Gotta
nominate this for Best Film, for sure. Do we want to nominate it for Best Role?
What's it up against so far?
So far, we have nominated Joel Goodson in Risky Business and Maverick in Top Gun. Is Vincent Loria, is he on par with some of Cruise's best roles? What do you think, Greg?
Well, I mean, are you guys watching all of the Tom Cruise movies? Because I feel like we could start a category where this is a best supporting role.
Oh.
Because I feel like we're sort of in the part of his career where, aside from Magnolia, maybe he's going to mostly be just the lead, but I guess we'll have more.
Yeah, you guys will watch, like, Lions for Lambs and stuff like that.
Okay.
Mostly I'm just trying to stack the deck to where he definitely wins the Cruise Award for best.
Do you want to nominate this for, I'm not sure, best or most badass role?
I mean, like, I don't know if I'd necessarily nominate it just because I know you guys are, like, going to come up on so many awesome and badass roles. You're going to be like, you know what? No, it's going to be Collateral, where his character is also named Vincent.
I think part of it is that his character is not much of a badass, right? Like, he's kind of a jerk. He's a flake. Like, he's kind of a dumbass. Like, you know, he gets his ass kicked.
Best dancing, I do want to say, playing pool
to
Werewolves of London.
I mean, also, I mean, just the karate dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah, even when it's not fitting the music appropriately, he's doing it anyway. It's just when he's in the zone, that's his... Those are his moves.
Best outfit wardrobe, I think the shirt, probably, right? The Vince shirt?
I mean, it's like, you know, it's up there with Indiana Jones jacket. It's up there with the best of them, you know, Vince the shirt.
Just thinking about whenever, like, Newman gets his glasses, but he's wearing like that V-neck sweater. I was like, oh, I want to wear that outfit.
Best sunglasses. I know that Paul Newman wears sunglasses. Does Cruise have iconic sunglasses in this or not really?
I can't think of them.
No, not that I can recall.
Is there a line that Tom Cruise says that we want to nominate for best line?
Doom could be in there. There's a handful of ones. I'm being overwhelmed with like them all car crashing in my mind, but almost every time that he's beating somebody at pool, he says some sort of ridiculous shit, but also he has really good like one-liners to Paul Newman.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I just kind of started getting lost in the movie and stopped writing notes at times, and then I was like, oh shit, I should have been writing like some of these things down because there's a lot of good stuff here.
Oh,
I was just like, oh well.
There is one line that I wrote down that I might nominate. It's one of the, it's what Greg was saying, you know, after he makes a cool shot in pool, he just says, it's like a nightmare, isn't it? It's just like, how? Like, come on, man.
That's good, yeah.
Like, you're kicking my ass and you're saying shit like that? Like, come on. Best freakout. I think his hallway freakout, where he rips the banister off the wall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Also, him jumping up and down on the bed, even though it's a happy freakout.
Very true. I do feel like this is kind of like a continuation in ways. Maybe it's the Risky Business character. Like, he just sort of, like, this man of privilege, like, I'm going to go be a grifter, because he kind of has that sort of vibe, you know what I mean? Like, that Joel Goodson vibe, so.
Or, you know, I didn't get into that college of choice, actually didn't get in there, you know? They found out why I got admitted. It was because I threw a party at the house, and the guy came in, I had to work at Child World instead and become a pool player.
The Frank T.J. Mackey origin story.
Most athletic feat. Do we want to say crazy trick shots, like doing all of his trick shots in this movie?
Are those athletic feats? Like, I mean, I don't want to downplay the difficulty, but
you guys were just talking about how violently impressive that was before.
Yeah,
and now you're like, nah, we won't nominate that for anything impressive. Fuck that.
Making trick shots. Best running scene, it's not going to compare to stuff. I mean, he runs a little bit. Actually, does Tom Cruise run in this movie? I'm going to say he runs the pool table for sure, but he also, he runs after Paul Newman's car once or twice. He runs after Paul Newman, but he doesn't really have the Tom Cruise running, sprinting thing in this movie.
Yeah, wait till you guys get to Far and Away. There's a shot of him in full sprint that literally dissolves into an explosion.
Whoa.
Sick.
Can't wait. Best or worst love story? Or is it just because, is it more of a question mark because we don't know if to what extent she's in on the grift or what the grift is, really?
Or is it between a love of the game?
I wouldn't say that this movie's overly romantic in any sense to where it should warrant any discussion, considering you definitely have some very romantic movies coming up. And if Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise don't win for Interview with the Vampire, then I call shenanigans preemptively.
You'll have to vote when we get to the Tom Cruise Awards voting in like a year and a half. You got to make sure you cast a ballot, whip your fellow voters into shape, start picketing for Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah. The yard's already covered.
So I think here we're going to have at least one for sure. Best non-Cruise actor, male or female. We got to say Paul Newman.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Do you want to nominate Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio or not really?
No, I'd leave it at Newman. I don't want to overly stack it in there.
Are there any other things that we want to nominate about this movie that like... So like the editing, I agree with you, Greg, is great, but we don't usually do the stuff. It's sort of stuff that's more directly related to Cruise himself.
Best hair, maybe?
Filmmaker that he worked with?
We did for Cage. We did best returning filmmaker. We did sort of best new filmmaker. I mean, the Scorsese stuff, that is...
I mean, you got Spielbergs, you got Kubricks, you got Scorsese. So, I mean, I feel like you could put this going like best filmmaker or something like that, where you could find a way to honor how awesome this Martin Scorsese movie is.
I'll say, so the question then is, are Mike, of the eight other things that we've done so far, is there anything else that should be nominated in this category?
Well, I mean, if we're going just off director, or it has to be in conjunction with the film, because I mean, Ridley Scott.
Well, I think for the film that he made, I think for his work in this movie,
even Legend, I'm a big fan of that.
Best filmmaker, and then you put like Martin Scorsese, and then parentheses you put the movie that Tom made with them, so they're only limiting the choices based off of the film that Tom Cruise made with that filmmaker.
Because like Uncle Francis made The Outsiders, but like, we're not saying the guy who made The Godfather is up here.
Maybe Tony Scott for Top Gun, just because it feels so him, like as a filmmaker, like it just feels like a lot like him.
I prefer Days of Thunder to Top Gun.
Haven't seen it yet, so
we'll get there. Yeah, very soon.
Might have to replace.
Any other things, any other nominees or categories that you think that we should honor The Color of Money for? I think we're pretty good. We have right now best film, best director / filmmaker, best Cruise supporting role, best dance scene, best outfit, Da Vinci shirt, best line, best freak out, most athletic feat, and then Paul Newman. Anything else about this movie that we want to nominate or honor in the eventual Golden Sunglasses.
That's good for now. It's quite a bit.
It's a good movie.
I mean, deservedly so, but still, that's a lot.
I can't wait till you guys have the podcast where you just go like, hey, do we want to nominate? You're like, nah, fuck this movie. Let's move on. Let's just pretend.
Oh, yeah, no, we've done that before, for sure. The next Cruise movie we're doing is Cocktail. Now, Mike, you've seen Cocktail?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm going to guess really quickly. So I knew for this movie, Greg, that this was a prequel or a sequel to a famous movie. I could not remember what it was because I knew that Mike had told me. I guessed it was a sequel to the, or prequel or whatever, the same year, Wall Street. But it's not. It's very clearly not. But also, Color of Money, Greed is good, for lack of a better word, whatever. Cocktail, I might actually get this right, because I know from what Greg said earlier, it's in the Bahamas. I know he's a bartender. I'm going to guess that he goes down, he's a man down on his luck. He's sort of like Matthew McConaughey, kind of in The Beach Bum, but not by choice. A little moondog in him. Goes down to the Bahamas to become a bartender down there, because that's the last thing that he has going for him, even though he's only 25, 26 in the movie or whatever. He falls in love with a girl, because that's, of course, what's going to happen. Oh, there's sex in a waterfall or something. I think I knew that, maybe. But it's the movie is about him finding his second life down in the Bahamas as a bartender at this really hip, nightclub-y kind of bar. That's what I'm guessing Cocktail is about.
Pretty super wrong. You got some of the points right.
I know some of them from theater, but, you know, I cannot wait to find out how wrong I am.
It's a drama. It's a.
Oh, really?
It gets really dark.
Wow, I was expecting kind of a sex romp. Okay, all right. Well, 2 weeks, we'll find out about Cocktail.
Don't fuck in a waterfall, though. That's the only thing that you got right.
So next week on the Hanks for the Memories, we have Volunteers, and then in 2 weeks, we have Cocktail. Greg, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for talking about this movie. Thank you for bringing your excitement and passion for this movie. We really appreciate you stopping by.
I very much appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
And I think you'll be on in a month or two, maybe, for Days of Thunder, if schedules work out. So I'm excited to sort of get back there and have you teach us the ways of how that's the superior Tony Scott movie.
It's Top Gun on the ground.
What could you not like about that?
Perfect pitch. So what do you got today? Top Gun on the ground.
Sold. Cool. What about Top Gun Underground?
I'll wait for that third one to happen.
Top Gun, Days of Thunder, Thunderground. Ooh, all right.
Thundergun.
For all things Cruise Club, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, run@cageclub.me. Check out our Patreon and Threadless page. And just, you know, say hi, let us know you're listening. I know the people are out there. I know the people like Tom Cruise, because who doesn't like Tom Cruise, especially who doesn't like these movies? This movie rules. Go see The Color of Money. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Greg McLennan. We'll see you in 2 weeks for Cocktail right here on Cruise Club.